Back in the studio with Mr. Adam Stone, the It Feels Right podcast. Today's episode, we are going to have a little tip in towards the end. Adam will tease that a little bit for us, but we're going to talk a lot about what happened in Dallas. Some rough weather, you know, indoor pickleball, shout out. And we are going to cover some a bit on the partnerships, a bit on the results. What else we got, Adam?
We got the tip of the week, of course, as you alluded to, moving or hitting shots while moving. What is the proper way to do that? And of course, we go down a couple rabbit holes of nonsense, whether you guys like it or not. But that's the IFR way, and that's what we do. Enjoy.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
This is the moment we waited for. Everything you want is right here. We gon' give them what they came for. We gon' take it up from last year. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Yeah.
Hello, Adam.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
I'm good. I'm fresh in Bristol, Tennessee. Just in this beautiful, beautiful podcast studio.
Yeah, the new stomping grounds, Bristol, Tennessee. Let's go.
Hey, Eastern Tennessee, Eastern Tennessee Nation, rise up. Let's go.
So is that St. Louis Shock? Is that just, you know, part of your wardrobe because you were a member of that team, or are you just a big fan of the current St. Louis Shock team?
Just a big fan of the St. Louis Shock in general. You know, let's go Chaffetz family. Let's go Shock. I mean, big Missouri guy. Love the city of St. Louis. Nelly, shout out to Nelly, my homie.
Country grammar.
You know, I'm a former St. Louis Shock athlete. So St. Louis is near and dear to my heart. Spent a lot of good hours there. With some good people.
Have you been in the arch?
No, but I've seen it. I've seen it in pictures.
I've been in it.
Yeah. What's going on in there?
Not a lot. It's just like a souvenir thing. And you kind of go up there and there's an elevator and whatnot. And that's pretty much it.
I didn't know you could actually go in it. So
it's the gateway to something. The West. What is it? It's the gateway to something. I'm not even
maybe
sure.
To the Midwest. I don't know. Is it? Yeah. So it's an arch though. So you can go inside the arch that's curved.
I mean, this was a while ago, but I feel like yes.
Is it?
Maybe I didn't go all the way up.
No, I like where we're going with this because I just could never imagine you can go inside the arch, but. Is it like a very tiny elevator that like, or is the arch bigger than I think it is?
Yeah, maybe I'm off. I know that there's a pretty big area with a souvenir shop, and I think that's underneath.
Right at the
base. And I mean, I feel like you can go in it, but now I'm starting to second guess myself. Now my memory is not what it used to be, Robert.
No, but. Yeah. to imagine, I just would never have thought you could go in the arch, you know, and who knows, you know, a lot of those little things you can go in and then you get to the, there's more space than you think. And there sometimes is even a little restaurant at the top. So maybe you even had a nice lunch up there. Who knows?
Hey, well, I'm glad we just went down a rabbit hole right at the beginning of arch construction.
Everybody in St. Louis is going to be like, either of course you go in it or you're an absolute idiot. Yeah, you're just so dumb. You're so dumb.
And that's okay. I can handle that. I can take that. So what'd you, Robert, what'd you do this weekend? Anything exciting?
What did I do? I just, a couple things. So I was in Indianapolis earlier this past week and then went to Macon, Georgia for a golden ticket event. And we went to it was held at a beautiful facility, Rhythm and Rally in Macon. It's the world's largest indoor pickleball facility.
Oh,
it used to be a Belk. If you know Belk,
I do.
And I know you,
I don't
know
what it is. It's just,
it's like a department store.
It has random. HVAC and it's a big building.
Yes.
That's what you need.
That's what you need. And it was the, like you walk, it's just clean. It, like this place was just like, It looked clean. It was minimal. The courts were nicely spaced. Carpet, kind of like carpeted areas in between, which for whatever reason just made it feel like it, I liked the carpet versus just having hard floors everywhere. It just added a level of like coziness or home. I don't know. But this was the cleanest indoor facility I've ever seen. Clean as in like, you know, just sharp. And two floors. First two floor facility I've seen. You got 16 courts upstairs, 16 courts downstairs, 32 indoor courts. And this place, man, it's, I mean, Macon, Georgia in the summer, it gets hot. But this place, I want to see their air conditioning bill. I want to see their electric bill. They are pumping that AC. It had to be at 62 degrees. I mean, it was frigid in there.
Talking my language. Love that.
Adam, as you would say, 62 indoors, cramping weather.
No, that, yes.
That'll sneak up on you.
Rob, when you least expect it. That's right. It's 85 and humid. You're electrolyting. You are hydrating. Yeah, yeah. You, it is in the top front of your mind. When it's 60 and crisp, watch out. That's when you're not ready for it to come. That's when it hits you.
Sneaks up on you.
Yeah, it really does. Well, Robert, I mean, I'm just going to say it's a lovely facility. 32 courts indoors, exciting times. Could have used that in Dallas this weekend where I was, as we had.
Yeah. It like seemed a little...
Eight of 11 or some wild number of tournaments has been affected by weather. I mean, just easy.
Which is crazy,
right?
Considering considering their outdoor tournaments. I mean, who would ever think that the weather could actually impact a pickleball?
Yeah.
You know, apparently when wetness falls out of the sky, it makes the ground wet, which makes playing a sport and moving laterally and forward and backwards difficult. Mm-hmm. And also I hear that if there's like puddles and wetness on the ground, that the ball doesn't actually bounce as much either. And if it's not wetness falling out of the sky, Adam, it is aggressive winds blowing from the west to the east or the north to the south or the east to the west, which also turns out affects this little light wiffle ball that we play these tournaments with. So unfortunate circumstances in Dallas, of course. Again, Macon was beautiful indoors. A little chilly for a little, 60 degrees. It's a little chilly for my liking, you know, but who's going to nitpick? Yeah. No wetness from the ceilings. No, even though the AC was blowing, there was no impact of wind from blowing from the walls or anything like that. It was fully enclosed, as you know, as pickleball facility should be.
Should be.
Yeah. So unfortunate circumstances, but you got the tournament in. It happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Persevere.
It makes for some. I was able to be a fan a little bit at this tournament. So I made some mistakes travel wise and ended up staying through Sunday, even though I did not work Sunday. My parents ended up coming up from Houston, so it was lovely. But also Saturday I was the early shift. So I was done at about 3 and there was a rain delay. So there was a ton of matches Saturday. I partook in a couple adult beverages and did some light heckling. And I think it's, of course, as a player, you want it to go smoothly. But as a fan, when there's a chunk of time that is delayed and then you have like just a bunch of matches from like 6 p.m. till 11 p.m. or something like that, I think that's some of the best viewing and some of the coolest atmospheres at the nighttime.
Prime time.
Everybody's a little lubricated, had a couple cocktails, and it was fun. So I enjoyed, because I'm normally the afternoon shift, and I just go eat by myself and sit in a dark room for 3 hours because I've talked so much. This time, it was pretty fun to just kind of watch the action and, just let loose a little bit. Enjoyed it.
Primetime pickleball is, you know, obviously I talk a lot about playing pickleball in enclosed areas where it can't be affected, but primetime pickleball is underrated. Under the lights, you know, if you're going to be outside, you might as well play at night. And it's certainly a better atmosphere watching pro picky under the lights.
Yeah. But no, it's these pop up thunderstorms. It's wild. I had forgotten about those a little bit for my 2 years in Dallas that I lived. So Yeah, I drove through one to get to the airport, and of course, like, I have an 8:41 flight, and it gets delayed 30 minutes, and I was like, oh god, this is a late flight. It's delayed 30
Here
minutes.
We go.
It's never delayed 30 minutes. It's always worse than that, and sure enough, you know, 45 minutes later, I get a text saying it's canceled. Messing up the tournament. Glad they were able to get everything in. I thought there was going to be a full-on washout day, and luckily, there's a barn-covered area, able to play a couple courts there, and then it cleared up. Each day that it rained, it cleared up, like, in the evening, so they could throw everybody outside, which was, of course, necessary, because I think they were only playing two courts inside.
This was at Oasis, right?
Oasis, yeah.
Yeah,
Oasis,
yeah.
So,
and
I mean,
yeah.
I was just going to say it was wild because, I mean, like, so, because you, like, drive up and park on the grass and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was just so wet. And the storms had been there for the week before also. So it was a little sloppy in some of the parking lot areas and whatever else because it was just saturated, like rain 10 days in a row or something like that.
I saw some, I think Grayson Golden posted some stories of cars being stuck in the mud. And
yeah.
It was like, there couldn't have been a better endorsement or commercial for indoor pickleball.
There it
was.
Is.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm glad I could tee you up for that. And you definitely took the bait on that indoor pickleball spiel. So nothing new here on IFR.
What were some of the most, I don't know, entertaining matches that stuck with you over the weekend?
Okay. Well, I mean, there's quite a few. I got the draws pulled up here. Well, I mean, we can just start off with the ladies. Why not, right?
I mean, Anna Lee lost.
Salome Davidze doing some work against Anna Lee. And 11-8 Anna Lee, 11-5, 11-7 for Salome Davidze. And this was on Thursday. So a traditional draw, not the progressive draw. And this was probably like 11 p.m. So I was already out of there. Mm. And I woke up the next morning Friday and heard the news that Anna Lee had lost. So, couple questionable calls and a couple variety of situations in that match. I don't know. This the only one. There's only one that I saw, kind of that near sideline with Don Stanley, who, you know, overall body of work does a great job. It was unfortunate that he missed that call in that moment. And of course, you know, people with their conspiracy theories. Oh, they want Anna Lee to win. Whatever. I think he just missed the call. But
he made the call, just to be clear, because I saw some stuff on it, but I don't actually know the details. I saw the ball. It was like on the near left sideline.
Yes.
And did anybody call it out, or did Don Stanley just like make the call?
I think that's what the social media uproar was. So I mean, very lightly looked at that post, and I think that's what somebody was saying, is that he was already talking to Salome about the situation before Anna Lee even challenged or questioned, or vice versa. Maybe I flipped that up. So, I don't know what happened previously in the match, but what I do think happens quite often with the referees is they have other responsibilities. They are looking at feet, and there's going to be a ton of different situations where they are asked and they don't know, and that's okay. But if that happens 2, 3, 4 times where they're, you know, they do the blocked off or didn't see it, I think that the pressure builds. Yeah. And eventually maybe they didn't see it 100%, and then they do an overrule or they make a ruling because they haven't seen it for so many points in a row. And that's all speculation, but I do think that is probably just human nature and has happened before. Not saying that's exactly happened in this situation.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And I mean, just Salome getting it done though. I mean, what Anna Lee's last singles loss was when?
Forever
ago.
It's a big
result. And it's, dude, Salome, she had a couple wins against Catherine, mm-hmm. Earlier this year, and now has beaten Anna Lee. Seemingly nobody in the world she can't beat in singles on any given day.
Yeah. She has, I mean, just phenomenal power on her ground strokes and very repeatable mechanics too.
Yeah.
So it's like she's generating this power, you know, a lot from her technique and her core and, you know, all that stuff I always talk about on the broadcast, but it's very repeatable. And to get that kind of power and have that extra life on your ball without having to kind of break form or have that huge backswing or do something crazy is pretty impressive. So striking the ball from the back of the court, she is as consistent as they come. And I have to imagine in that match that the only weakness that I've really ever seen in Anna Lee is a wingspan issue. So
yeah.
I would imagine, I don't know how much Anna Lee was staying back or coming forward, but even if you're coming in on good balls against Salome Davide, she can pass you from a variety of spots. And I would guess that happened quite a few times to be able to come up with a win against AL.
Yeah. And I think the most impressive bit about it is she's doing it. You know, we talk about singles and in the men's side, especially, you see a bunch of young players coming in, super athletic, just ripping big groundies, especially with the paddles. You don't have to, it's much less of an adjustment coming from tennis now, because you can play with the semi-Western grip and the ball goes over now. But on the women's side, Salome to be doing this at her age, is pretty wild, pretty impressive.
I
don't understand why there's not more, like, more ladies coming into the singles game and getting results right away. That's been, to me, that's like, I said it a while ago, I think the lowest hanging fruit in sports or women's sports and pro sports is talented female tennis players coming over into pickleball and making a mark.
Yeah.
It's a very easy way to make a living. Not easy, yeah, I mean, but like,
sure, sure. I mean, we talk about Matt Wright all the time and his age. What Salome's doing on the singles court might even be more impressive from an age perspective when you're dealing with doubles and with singles. And yeah, I mean, I scrolled through whenever I was done each day, I scrolled through a little Twitter. You were deep in the Twitter streets.
I did a tweet storm. Like, yeah, I was going hard. Ooh,
heavy. Was it caffeine or alcohol aided?
Oh, it's caffeine. I was going, you know. You get enough of these bad boys in you. The mind starts firing away. The mind's just going. I want to say everything. I got lots of takes that need to get out of my brain and into the Twitterverse. Dude, Salome's 38. I just checked that. 38. Yeah. Annalise, how old? 17 now?
17. I believe it's 17 is the number. Yeah. So that's.
So double her age plus four.
Carry the four. Carry the four. Yep.
Double her age plus four. That's 21 year age difference.
That's baller. That's good. Fantastic mental math.
Thank you.
That's impressive stuff. 38 singles, doubles, big difference. Way to do it, Salome. And other semifinal was Catherine versus Leia. Leia won 11-7 in the third. Catherine having a little dip in singles results. I think one of the little stats for the tournament that we got through through commentary was three medals this year in singles. 11 events, three medals, and that is definitely at a slower pace for Catherine than she was cooking at in 2023, where she seemed to be medaling almost every single tournament. So, that was that. They did not play the bronze medal match.
Why not?
Catherine and Anna Lee. I think it's a small fine and not surprising that the two partners and Anna Lee had two matches on Championship Sunday. So that doesn't surprise me for a bit. And Leia Jansen getting it done. 11-2 in the third against Salome on Sunday. So Leia having won. She likes Texas, man. Won a title in Houston, now a title in Dallas. And good for her.
Good for her. What are your thoughts, Adam, on the – because I don't think the men's doubles played the bronze either. What are your thoughts on not having that bronze match?
Players
choosing not to play it.
I think when you have someone who is playing one, if one or two. Basically, if they're playing anything else on Sunday, I mean, I can't really fault it too much. Now, I know it's on the grandstand court, and it's kind of, it's not overlooked. There's plenty of fans watching the grandstand court, and I know people do on YouTube during Championship Sunday. So I like the bronze medal matches, and I'm sure I want them to be played. It's quality pickle, but I get some of the situations when they pull the ripcord on that bronze medal match, and I'm not even positive. I think it's like a $500 fine or something. Maybe that just doesn't get paid. Maybe it does get paid. Maybe I just made that $500 up. I'm not sure. But of course I want to see it, but if it doesn't happen occasionally or in a specific situation, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I'm on the other side of that. I think for the amount of money these people are getting paid salary wise, you play the match. You're getting so much money that's over, like, let's be honest, everybody's overvalued. You're getting money more money than you should be getting. And you're being a diva and not playing the match because you have a couple other matches on Sunday. Get out of here. Play the match. You're getting paid. Give it to the fans. They're there to watch you. Play the match. You're getting paid. Play.
Reasonable
that's my,
take.
That's my take.
Good cop, bad cop. Just like it's always been, brother.
That's not even a bad cop. It's just my take. I don't even think it's a bad. It's just you're getting paid. You should play.
Let's just shift right over and talk about, gosh dang, Chris Haworth. My lord. Like, some of these score lines are obscene.
Roscoe Bellamy just destroyed people.
Roscoe Bellamy, great singles player, beat Tyson and Los Cab a month ago or whatever. 3-3, Haworth takes him down.
Destroyed.
Next round, Dustin Boyer, who upset Tyson McGuffin in the previous round, 3-1 for Haworth, and then beat Hunter Johnson, who is an amazing singles player. I'd probably put Hunter somewhere in the, I don't know, 8-12 range.
Yeah.
1-1 yep. in that matchup, and then beats Federico Staxrud in the semifinals, 11-6, 11-2. I watched that one, and I'm not sure I've seen a cleaner match from somebody. Both wings, forehand and backhand, swinging two-handed volleys, pushing volleys, two-handed volleys up the line, ripping them cross-court wherever he needs to go. I mean, 11-6, 11-2 against the most consistent singles player in the world. What a tournament for Chris Haworth.
Yeah, and then I saw his first game in the final against Ben. It was like 11-2. Yeah. I was like, 11-2. Oh, dude, he's just – I mean, this dude is the new best player in the world. He can't miss. He's ripping, you know, two-handed backhands from his back foot in the middle of the court, somehow still curving it in. It's like, what? And I mean, in the past, he was playing with that gearbox that was just absurdly powerful, and a lot of it made sense. And now he's playing with a new Babolat. And
Babolat, yeah.
It hasn't seemed to affect his play. If anything, it looked really sharp.
Yeah.
So, I mean, big, yeah. Great tournament for him. Couldn't get it done in the final after coming out super hot. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun to watch him continue to get better. I remember him playing, I think it was against Ben and Mesa, maybe last year, or it might have been last year, earlier in the year. And it was kind of like one of his first tournaments. And I think he took a game. And I was like, oh, dude, this guy's pretty big. He's tall. He has a huge wingspan, and he's got filthy ground strokes. So to see him progress and get better, it's been fun to watch. And he's going to be a real issue.
Yeah, it's legit. And the ground strokes, of course, amazing. But I think the most impressive thing is that two-handed backhand up at the kitchen line. Even when he's transitioning, he's not even established at the kitchen line. He's flying forward after return or after an approach shot, most likely a return in men's doubles. And he just crushes it everywhere. I mean, line, cross, like a lot of people, it's like when you're transitioning. I remember when I used to play, I would have that swinging cross court forehand.
Yeah.
But I couldn't hit it on the line when I was transitioning and I was moving. Chris Haworth, not a problem at all whatsoever. Putting it to all the spots, losing 11-9 in the third game on Championship Sunday. And I was actually out there watching. Mama and Papa Stone came up from Houston. So I was actually out there watching Sunday and – And the bronze medal match was Dylan Frazier and Federico Staxrud, and Fed rolled his ankle. I think it was game two, possibly even game three, took a medical timeout and actually ended up coming back and beating Dylan, who had beat him in game one, 11-6, and then Federico won games two and three, 11-7, 11-9. So some fun stuff going on in the men's singles draw, which is not really a shocker, as we've seen a variety of, you know, the top seeds making it, and of course, plenty of upsets throughout that discipline pretty much all year.
I think Fed with that result still on top of the rankings as the number one player, right?
No, I think he got passed up because he lost a championship Sunday to Ben. So I think with Ben making the finals and Fed getting Ben winning and Fed getting the bronze, I think that he will stay at number two.
Okay, because I saw Fed post something about.
Yeah, I mean, still, I think Fed was only number one for 1 week. maybe I was off of that. You know, I'm one of the lead commentators of the event. I should probably know these things, but it's okay. Taking a look at some of those.
Yeah, Fed's still number one based on the website. Anyways, I don't know if they've updated it after this past event.
Yeah, I'm not positive. Looking through the mixed draw now. Pretty fun early. I actually, before my shift started on mixed doubles Friday, I watched this match. It was Lucy and Matt versus Will Howes and Alex Trong. And Howes and Matt, they this
that's
one
gotta be on the stream. We gotta put that on the stream, guys.
Yeah, it was on Grandstand. It wasn't particularly close, 11-1, 11-7 for Matt and Lucy, but Howes didn't give a dang. He was chirping the whole time. They were going back and forth, and I mean that's super entertaining. That was very early. A round of 32 match. Thomas and Viv, ended up making it all the way to the semifinals, but they looked a little off to me in the matches that I called and watched of them. And then Anna Bright was playing with Tyson McGuffin because James is just an odd fellow. He decided he was going to play singles and not play mixed in this particular event. And I know we already covered the men's draw, but he had a very tight score line with Federico Staxrud, 11-9, 14-12. So James can play a little singles. Don't know why he decided to do that and not play mixed. Maybe just relationship issues. You never know. A solid bronze for Anna Bright and Tyson McGuffin beating Thomas and Viv in the bronze medal match. And the Johnsons made a nice run, JW and Georgia, beating Thomas and Viv in the semifinals, but getting hurt pretty good in the finals against Ben and Anna Lee in three straight games.
I've got nothing.
You got nothing. I was waiting.
I just liked the rundown. It was great.
It was a rundown. It was a little me talking.
It's perfect.
Do you like it when I talk more or when you?
I love it. Keep rolling.
Keep rolling. Okay.
Yeah, this is good. Right.
Okay. Well, no, that's all I got for mix. I know I'm missing something that was kind of fun in there, but just scrolling through. That's just what it is. It's a tough draw, man. I mean, there's a lot when you guys
mix is tough, man. There's a lot of good teams.
When you have the one draw and you get the names kind of combined from the men's and the women's draw, and you see some of these teams and some of these round of 32 matchups, it's like hot. That is an issue.
Yep.
Yeah, big time issue.
Seeding matters.
Yeah, seeding matters. So, and then shifting over to women's, we had Rora Bakker at a wedding. So Anna Bright, her second protege, Kate Fahey, and they had a nice little run, a couple really tight matches early on. They played a three-gamer against Irvin and Pisnik, played a 14-12 game three against Millie Rain and Bobby Oshiro. And then ended up losing pretty comfortably in the semifinals to Anna Lee and Catherine, who just, man, they just fire away. Like, Catherine looks so insanely comfortable in terms of a speed-up perspective when she's playing with Anna Lee. And
yeah.
I just don't remember her being, you know, just ready to fire with any of her other partners, even in mixed doubles, too.
Yeah.
So, they play great. They play free, and I mean the ladies playing free in gender doubles and the men's playing in fear. Like that's how I see it.
It's very true. It's such a good point, Adam. Going from I mean the women are all playing 2-3 feet off the line and just just ripping everything. And then, you know, in a, if it's low, they're resetting it into the kitchen every single time. All of the dinks are very aggressive rolls. It's just a different brand of pickleball. And on the men's side, it's, yeah, you're right. It's more fear-based.
It's fear. It's just,
keep
it's complete
this ball
fear.
Unattackable.
It's like bunting, plain dinks. And yeah. And then you can see, like, even when I'm watching these matches, especially when it's against the Johns brothers or against Dylan and JW or those like heavy counterattack teams, even against Matt and Deckel, whose counterattacks were on point, like you can see the player start to speed up and then just almost second guessing themselves. Like, if this is not a perfect speed up, I'm going to eat this bad. So free play and fear play really sums up gender doubles more and more, I think.
I mean, what do you think on that though? Like, it's been a pretty, it seems to be a pretty consistent consensus. Why am I even attempting to say that?
That's tough.
That's a tough one. That's out of my wheelhouse, but women's doubles is more entertaining, I would say, for most people to watch in terms of gender doubles over men's. Mm-hmm. Men's, like you said, fear-based, a bit more boring, soft dinks, daring the other team to take a crack and speed up. Where women's is, it's free swinging. Is there a world where the guys, we adjust the technology, whether it's the probably be the ball, or we play with like a slower, softer ball to where that makes sense. And you can have those free swinging rallies and it's more entertaining. Or do you see a world where that happens or should happen, in your opinion?
Should happen and happens is two different situations.
What's your thought? Should it happen?
I think so. I mean, I'm not sure. Yeah, like I'm not sure exactly where that threshold happens, but I think that we probably are right there, if not haven't clearly crossed it yet with some of the point construction and the paddle technology. And like when we were on the Big Fox on Sunday, mm-hmm. if we're on national TV, I'm not sure showing a men's match is the play. You know what I'm saying? Like pickleball TV, YouTube, whatever. Those people know, they know pickle, they're diehards. They understand what's happening in some of those men's matches. But a general audience just watching on FS1 or Big Fox, like,
I think you have to put men's singles on that.
Men's singles or mixed or women's doubles, because just watching, you know, JW and Dylan bunt the ball to the middle of the court and then slap a counter. And while we know slapping that counter is unreal and just uber talented, I'm not sure the average fan does after, you know, 14 dinks and then just a one ball rally, as opposed to the extended exchanges like six shot combinations that you see in women's doubles, and really the digs, the 3 feet off of the kitchen line, full stretch digs from the ladies, you know, mid firefight or when the opponent finally does get one down at their feet, is ridiculous. And I think that translates more to a general audience than some of the strategic men's doubles play.
Yeah, totally agree. Before we get into the episode, we have to tell you about a must have for anyone in the pickleball world. If you're an avid pickleball player and don't have this app downloaded on your phone, you're missing out on so much. Meet the Selkirk TV app, the first and only free streaming and on-demand app dedicated to everything pickleball. Whether you're a player, a fan, or just curious about the sport, Selkirk TV is your one-stop shop for all things pickleball. Get exclusive early access to content you won't find anywhere else, like lessons, courses, podcasts, and much, much more. Imagine improving your game with the pros or catching the latest pickleball buzz before anyone else. Need more? How about a 24/7 live stream featuring new content daily? From gripping PPA tournament matches and live coverage of grandstand court to insightful player interviews, Selkirk TV has it all. You can dive into the action anytime, anywhere. If you're already watching this episode on the app, thank you. But if you aren't, what are you doing? Download the Selkirk TV app now. It's a must-have for anyone who loves pickleball. Visit selkirk.com/TV
to get it.
I think it'd be just super interesting going to a or not all the time, just the same way we see with tennis. Like, we've got the French going right now, right? So it's, you know, the playing on clay suits certain players that are great baseliners, that are fast, that have really heavy ground strokes. It's a different brand of tennis than Wimbledon, where big serves and good volleys, and it's just different. So why don't we experiment in different tournaments with different conditions? You know, those are obviously court conditions. You go grass to clay. But what if there was a world where we played with a softer ball for a tournament and everybody had time to prepare? And it was, and going even beyond that, a season, you know, like you have a clay court season, you have a grass court season, which is short, you have a hard court season, which is longer in the summer. I think it would be super interesting to just create more variance by having different balls where, or potentially different surfaces. I don't know. It would just be unique and it would be fun to watch. And it would be interesting to see how players adjust.
No, I totally agree. And I mean, maybe I'm just completely out of bounds here, but when some of the specs of the paddle testing or whatever, you could even have different limits or something with the paddles. And you know, maybe that's just not an option or something so far in the future. It's not even worth talking about. But I think having different styles and different situations like that, where you know, a skill set can be lifted up or brought down at different parts of the year, does make for an interesting dynamic and would allow some certain skill sets and certain players to have more or less success, creating some parity and some, you know, not the same stuff all the time. So I'm with that. And I will say this, Robert, since I brought up Big Fox, really cool situation, because when we go on a big network, like, it's much more intense. They're talking to us more in the headsets. We have to, like, get the commercials in and get these plugs in and do this and that. And they pushed off MLS soccer. So they went 45 minutes longer than they were supposed to, because there was supposed to be a block of MLS soccer, Major League Soccer, right after pickleball. And they sent that to their app and continued to play pickleball. And I don't know this, but in my mind, the only way they would do that is numbers related. So meaning they were getting more viewership and better viewership than they thought on pickleball, so they held it on the network longer. So that's very cool. That has to be a positive in terms of what the numbers were of people viewing on Big Fox. So that, I think that's very exciting for pickleball in general.
Yeah, that's huge. Adam, I'm in your camp though for this one. I hope that's the case, and I hope the numbers were just through the roof, and they extended because it was high quality viewership and people were loving it. What match was on during that extension?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I wasn't working Sunday. In my defense, I was
that's
not
fair.
Working Sunday.
That's fair. That's
I
fair.
Was not working Sunday.
Yeah, if you were working, so, you'd be all over that.
I would probably not know either, as it all goes together. But thank you for that little caveat.
No, but being on Fox is, I mean, that's huge, especially on a Sunday afternoon. That's a good spot. Do we have more national broadcasts coming up?
I mean, yes. I mean, I know there's usually a block of at least 2 hours on one of the days. I was on FS1, I believe, on Saturday from 1 to 3. And then there was a 2 hour block that extended to about 3 hours on Sunday on the actual Fox. So
even FS1's a big deal.
Yeah, almost every tournament there is a block of time that we are on a bigger network, and it's much more. Like I said, it's much more intense. Also, in terms of commentary, I mean, I know the like diehards that are watching like 12 of the 18 hours of coverage per weekend get annoyed with the commentators repeating stuff, but we're constantly kind of introducing new audiences and like getting, and someone's in the ear, they're like, okay, hey, we're getting FS1 over here, or this is joining us from a previous recorded sporting event, and this audience is joining us. So you kind of have to to go through it a couple times and be a little bit repetitive when that's the situation, because the new audience doesn't know what you just said, and you have to kind of set things up and say a few things. So
yeah, and one thing I wish commentators would say more of and repeat more of is who they are, their name, because you know that happens a lot. We've talked about that. It's like commentators don't. Like, I'll be listening to whether it's a stream or like whatever it is. And I'm like, who is that? Like, what voice is that? Just say your
name.
It's
kind of fun to try to figure it out. No, I hear you.
Just say your name.
Just say your name. Oh yeah.
Say my name.
Let me see what happened in men's doubles. We lightly talked about it. Really nice run for Matt Wright and Dekel Bahr. And man, people love to talk about me and Michelle McMahon saying Matt Wright's 46 years old and a lawyer too much. I think we should say it every 15 seconds. Yeah. He's a lawyer. He's 46. He's crushing people. So screw all you people.
He plays a little picky in his spare time in Wichita.
And then rolls
out to these tournaments and waddles up and just lights people up.
Yeah, a couple it kind of got a little chalky, meaning standard seeds deeper in the men's draw. But there was some interesting early round upsets. Your boy Greg Dow and Quang Duong upsetting DJ Young and Tyler Leung. That's pretty solid win.
I said not an upset on Twitter, and people got very upset about my saying not an upset.
I think it's an upset, and maybe we'll just go. It's an upset.
Of course, it's an upset.
Not because of Dow though, because of Quang Duong. It was a singles player, and
it's an upset. But that's what you do on Twitter. You say not an upset to upset people, and it worked. Everybody relax. Of course, it's an upset.
But I mean. It's an upset. Fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's not crazy surprising, but it's an upset.
Right. Yeah. No, I can't argue with that. And oh, let's give a shout out to old school ya boy Rob Cassidy, as you guys were known as Cassidy picked up Eric Onsens for his partner and were able to defeat Hunter Johnson and Thomas Wilson 11-6, 11-5. That's an obscene scoreline.
Not an upset. Hey, Rockwall is where Cassidy comes to play.
Okay.
2 years ago, was it 2 years ago? I don't know. Cassidy and I got the championship Sunday at Rockwall, mm-hmm. and we lost to Ben and Matt in the best of five.
Cassidy,
that's where Rockwall is where Cassidy comes to play.
The man's got hot hands. You can't attack him sometimes.
Don't attack him.
You can't do it. You can dink to him aggressively over and over and over
again. That's all you should ever do.
it's hard to keep that restraint, though, because his hands get hot and his counters are disgusting, to be honest with you. Puts him kind of down. It creates a difficult situation.
And Eric Onsens, dude, he's I mean, everybody watch out. He just finished college tennis, Florida Gulf Coast. He's training nonstop with Simone down there in Naples. Onsens is coming for everybody. Everybody watch out.
Yeah, we'll see. I'd say he's, from what I've seen, it's okay. Legit power, lots of tools at the disposal, great athleticism, all that stuff. I think I would say his soft game leaves something to be desired, but you can
beginning.
You can fix that. So, reasonable statement. And let's give another shout out here to AJ Kohler, the Iceman. AJ Kohler getting a nice win with this Noe Cliff guy who is supposedly pretty solid. He's from the Dallas area. He's talented from what I've seen. And they were able to defeat Roscoe Bellamy and Yates Johnson pretty comfortably, and then also comfortably beat Pablo Tellez and Julian Arnold. Now that is a very legit win, as I haven't seen Julian Arnold running deep in almost any event for quite some time now.
Why do you think that is?
I don't exactly know. I mean, clearly he's got a volatile playing style, you know, some ups and downs. So he can kind of tee the bed whenever, even though he also has the ability to upset or beat people better than him if he's playing well. So maybe he's just kind of in one of those valley situations. and not, you know, not reaching those peaks like he was maybe a year or so ago. So
do you think is it a situation of he got a little cash in his pocket and lost some hunger?
Possibly could be. Yeah, possibly could be. He seems to like designer bags and, you know, things like that. So maybe that could be it. I cannot speak for him.
Yeah. I don't know.
That was a funny yep, Rob. A little smirk on your face there after that one.
I haven't talked to Julian in a long time. I'm just curious either on where his head's at and how motivated and how hungry he is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a reasonable statement. I mean, he clearly has talent. So maybe it is something more mental, as I kind of felt like I was running into him at tournaments and chatting with him more frequently, a year or so ago than I have been lately. So I really have no idea. I just wanted to get the Iceman in there, AJ Kohler, you know, a little circa 2021, 2022, bringing the hands back, and a new up and coming partner and Noah Cliff. So
how long do you think the Hunter Johnson, Thomas Wilson, obviously, we'll get into this, Sacramento coming up this week. Thomas is playing with Jack Sock, which, I mean, probably, I would say they play very, very similarly.
Yeah, they do.
In terms of really favoring that forehand, great movement, very exciting to watch. You know, if we're talking gender doubles, you know, that's who we'd want, you know, playing on a Fox on Championship Sunday, just in terms of pure playing style.
Agree completely.
But how long do we think this Thomas Wilson, Hunter Johnson thing goes?
There was quite a few in mixed doubles and in gender doubles where it's MLP teammates kind of getting together to play. So,
yeah, sure.
And Hunter Johnson played phenomenal in MLP. He was one of the highest rated players at MLP. Yep. So, but yeah, they're buddies. They train together. I know they're good friends off court, and they're Mad Drops, LA Mad Drops partners for MLP. So I don't think it's necessarily going to stop. I don't know if it was a one-off. I don't think this specific result is going to break them up if they had multiple other tournaments together. So it's just, yeah, it's just kind of what it is. They probably didn't play their best, and they ran into a team that was hot, and that's how it goes these days. So I don't think it's that big a deal. What's up?
Breaking news.
Oh God.
From Josh, producer. Oh. Josh, uh-huh. You can go to the top of the arch. Which I'll tell you right now, I was questioning it. I thought that arch is too small. There's no way you can go to the top of it. Is it a curved, would it have to be a curved elevator? Like, I just thought, no chance. You're wrong. You forgot something. Maybe you went to the Empire State Building and you confused it with the arch. You can go to the top of the arch. You did it, Adam.
I did do it.
Beyond all doubt that I had, you did it. I want to apologize for, you know, the smirks and the, you know, not believing you.
I just wanted to guess it. I wasn't sure. I mean, I wasn't sure if I went up or not. Like, after you said a couple of things, I was like, oh God, did I do it?
I'm sorry for doing that to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Make me.
I'm sure it was a great experience.
That. Yeah. I think it was lovely. So that is some real breaking news. I thought it was going to be some BS breaking news. That's real stuff right there.
No, that's what matters.
That's what matters. And okay, let's look here. Last thing about the men's draw. We had another bronze medal match not play. Ben and Colin, not surprising. Given Ben had two other matches that day, but I know your take on bronze medal matches. We already went through that. But I mean, look at these kids, Dylan Frazier and JW Johnson.
Third in a row.
2-4 against Patrick Quinn and Callan Dawson. That's a very good team. 3-5 against Jaume Martinez Vic and Tyson McGuffin. I mean, these score lines are obscene from those guys. And ended up losing game one of the Championship Sunday match to Dekelbar and Matt Wright, and then winning the next three pretty comfortably. So three-peat for the young Bucks. They're looking real good. Electric hand speed, consistent play, everything you want to see for men's doubles.
Some early round action out on court 31. I got a random DM in my Twitter from Rafa Hewitt, and it was just a video of a line call on court 31 on the far side from the ref on a ball that Will Howell sped up from the left off his forehand over J-Dub's left shoulder, clipped the net, And then, I mean, from the looks of the video, and it's always a little tough, right? It's at an angle a little bit, but the ball looked pretty clearly in. And it was, I think Rafa said it would have been 7-5-1 to them in the third. So,
and that, Rob, that's great intel, and that clearly affected Rafa Hewitt because they lost game 3 11-6.
Correct.
So it would have gone to 7-5, and they end up losing 11-6. I think Rafa got a little rattled. But important to mention, we talked about the kids destroying very good teams. The scoreline with Will Howes and Rafa Hewitt was 12-10, 5-11, 11-6 in the third. So clearly a very tight match, and absolutely no idea. I don't even know what the clip you're talking about, but maybe that could have changed a little momentum for Howes and Rafa Hewitt, who were in a very good spot against a very good team.
But you can't let that affect you to where you lose the next 6 points in a row.
Yeah, that's several, Rafa.
You gotta fight through that. And the kids, I mean, I played them a fair amount, watched a lot. They are very fair on line calls. Everybody, you know, we're calling our own lines. Everybody misses calls, so I don't put too much into it. It's tough. It's tough to. There's plenty of balls that I've seen out that were in off a challenge, and you just roll with it.
I cheated in a tournament in Arizona, and it was the stream queen, Cimarron Gonzalez, who was filming. Yeah. And I was playing Matt Staub and Bubba Zabinden. I see the ball. It's out. Like, yep. I'm 110% sure. And, yep. You know, of course, we continue play. I mean, I think that they know that I'm a pretty fair line caller. So there was a little bit of beef, and I think that they questioned it and said something over, but we just continued play. And then I looked at it on camera afterwards, and the ball hit the line. So, yeah. So I think it just does happen. And another thing somebody brought up is just having tons of lines judges out on the court. But I remember back in the day,
it's a disaster.
Like, it's a disaster. Like, it's a disaster. As long as it's the correct four people on court, we would agree, the four players would agree, and we would have the lines judges go away for a medal match and just call our own lines, because it was pretty rough. And some of those line callers were volunteers. Now it seems to be just actually referees. But I don't care what anyone says. These world-class athletes and these pickleball players with insane hand-eye coordination and ball-tracking ability for tens of years playing tennis, other sports, and pickleball, they will always be able to call better lines than a referee. That's just what it is. Now, they're moving, they're playing. That adds degree of difficulty into it. But, you know, a lot of people are up in arms and love to talk about line calls. And I know it is an important topic, but, you know.
I agree to an extent. I mean, I think obviously players, it's different than tennis. It's a smaller court. Like, we've got a good, you know, like you said, ball tracking ability. Like, we know typically based on trajectory, all of that stuff, like, we're pretty dialed into like what's going in and what's going out. And I think the main issue on the referee side is in tennis, if you're a line judge, you go through training to be a line judge, like extensive training.
Right.
It's not like you're a chair umpire and then, you know, you get thrown down to do lines. No, you go through extensive training to call lines based on a lot of scenarios. And the issue is that our referees aren't doing that, right? Because it hasn't been a big piece of the pro game at this point. But it's obviously an ongoing issue of line calls and no repercussions and what's the solution here. And yeah, I think one, it takes a lot of manpower. It's heavy labor to have, call it, what would you need? You need to get the baseline as well. You six. Need six and then a chair umpire to look at the kitchen. That's just too much manpower per court, especially if, you know, you're going to do every pro match like that. Or just championship court. I don't know, but I think the answer is going to be eventually technology. I think we'll have electronic line calls eventually, and that will be, that should be kind of the standard. I think the issue is going, you know, right now technology is pretty expensive. That'll go down, I'm assuming, in the next couple of years, as technology always does. But I think it would make a lot more sense if the tours had kind of like these anchor homes or anchor venues where you can kind of deck out some of these courts with everything you need, call it Hawkeye, call it whatever, and always have that. So the fact that we go to different cities and different tour stops, it just, you know, logistically, it makes it very, very tough to implement a lot of the stuff.
Yeah, manpower, money, it's all kind of the same thing. So I agree with that. And we're these serious facilities are popping up here and there, and I think that they will be more established moving forward. Yeah, but right now it's, you know, solid facility, a little bit lesser facility, tennis facility with spaciousness, more of a, you know, park situation. And that's just what it is. You have to have a baseline of a certain amount of courts. And if you don't have it, the facility doesn't work. So, yeah, that's a hot topic. People love to talk about it. And hopefully we get some help in that regard. Whether it's a better manpower situation or possibly some technology to improve the replay system. But, you know, what can you do? Robert, do you have any tips for these viewers to improve their picky game?
I do. But before we get there, I've got just pretty solid news update for UPA. They... looks like Dundon pulled in his buddy George Killebrew to be chief revenue officer, which obviously a very important role, and it's a great hire. He was running the Pro Rugby League as commissioner, and I think prior to that he was chief revenue officer for the Dallas Mavericks.
Oh,
which is, you know, they did some I'm sure they did some revenue, so. Pretty impressive hire, pretty big hire to pull in a guy of that background and experience to be in charge of revenue for UPA and increasing sponsorship dollars, increasing revenue. So, you know, that's a net positive.
Yeah, no, that's great. I did not know that. And that sounds like quite the resume for that. So
I mean, perfect blend, right? You got an NBA chief revenue officer and then also somebody that's run a startup sports league. I mean, what more? I mean, that's a huge hire.
Yeah, no, definitely. More money, the better. And that carries over from that topic that we were just talking about. Get a little more revenue, get an extra sponsor, maybe get that technology or that something to help with some of the line call situation. So, the more
and they
the merrier.
They need to pay the players more money, so we have to have more revenue coming in.
Yeah, more
money's
more.
Too low.
Yeah, I mean these players are. I mean they're only getting 10 or 15% of what they should. Yeah, right now
not enough designer absolutely. Bags out there.
Absolutely,
Adam. Before we get to the tip, I will say that there's been a documentary crew that, you know, had been floating around for the last however many years, Dreambreaker, a pickleball story, I believe is the name of it. I watched it. Well, I kind of watched it. I kind of like, you know, fast forwarded through a lot of it, but, it was to me like a bit of like satire in terms of, it had like this underlying tone of just like making fun of how ridiculous pickleball is, which fair, right?
Fair.
It's super fair. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, these pro players are, you know, buying Range Rovers and you know, it's just there's a lot of Sherry, a lot of Ryan Sherry, Cher Bear, mm-hmm. Who was great on camera actually. He's super natural and I would say much more toned down than he is in real life. So. There's a lot of Paris Todd. Who else was there? A lot of
hey, Todd. So is this the same one where it was kind of like at a Vegas club and like spraying champagne on Meg McGuffin and Tyson? Is that the
there's
same?
A lot of
is
Tyson and
same,
Meg.
Same situation. Okay.
Yeah, I believe so. I believe so. It went into kind of some of the player stories and really kind of the beef between, you know, pre-merger PPA and MLP and everything that happened with that. So it just kind of told the story of what's happened in pro pickleball the last couple of years, with a heavy underlying tone of it's so silly because this is pickleball. Like it ended. So Sleeves Pickleball Report, on Twitter and Instagram, he lives in a yurt, and he was kind of like the narrator of the whole thing. Okay. And I mean, he did a great job, super, super well spoken, articulate, did a great job of like breaking down what was happening and telling the story. And it would kind of like start with him, and then it would go into other stuff, and then it would come back to him. So he was kind of the narrator. And then it ended with him and two other people playing a song, like on a banjo or something, sitting in the woods on like stumps, strumming a pickleball song. So that, to me, that was like kind of the underlying of like, yeah, this thing is so silly, and these are the people that are involved in pickleball, and it's this is pickleball.
Well, so I'll stick with your statement. That's fair.
Yeah,
fair.
But I mean, yeah, I thought it was interesting. It's not quite what I expected, but it was it was solid.
I'm gonna check it out. Where can you see it?
Is it on platform or something? I just saw that they had it for the San Francisco Film Festival, I believe, and then nice, they had like a $10 link to watch it online. Gotcha. So I did that, and it was interesting.
Well, that's fun. I will like to check that out. I like documentaries, and I like pickleball.
So. Oh, you're a big doc guy. Nobody, yeah. Fits, I don't. We haven't talked about that in a while. You're a big documentary.
Big doc guy. I think we can pick another day to talk about that. Let's tell these people.
Adam,
let's tell these people.
Adam's like, just say the tip already.
Say the tip. Let's
man. Wrap this. Say the tip.
Come on.
All right.
Come on.
It's something you mentioned earlier, Adam, with Chris Hayworth being on the move, ripping volleys, and it's one like you don't teach that, right? Like you teach people to be stationary as they're hitting the ball, because usually if you're moving, it's timing's tougher. Everything's off a little bit. You want to be stationary as the ball is coming at you. And I think there's certain instances where that's not the case. And maybe you can give some, Adam. Mm-hmm. But the one that I always talk about when I'm teaching is, and it's my biggest pet peeve and non-negotiable to people I teach. I don't care if you're overweight. I don't care if, like, you have to get to the line off the return, period, end of story. There's no moseying up there. I don't care how you do it, but you have to get to the line for the fourth, period. And that's like one of, like, if I'm in a coaching session and I see a player not get to the line, points over, you lose immediately, point stops, next point. I care that much about it. So the way I teach it, though, is always start, you know, as far back basically from the baseline as you can, as much room as the court gives you. And as the ball's coming, the serve's coming, you are moving through the return, not stopping. And that's going to carry, you're going to have to shorten your backswing even more. And that momentum is going to carry you to the kitchen line. That's how I always teach it. So that's one of the few instances where you want to be moving through the ball as the ball is coming to you. Just because I care so much about getting to the kitchen line off the return.
Yeah.
Any other instances that you can think of where you want to be moving through the ball or moving as you hit?
Well, I think a perfect example is playing singles and hitting a first volley off of the line. So you're kind of just gathering yourself. You're getting athletic. Maybe your center of gravity lowers, but you're not stopping. You're definitely not stopping and just getting set and rotating your body and hitting, or you're not going to make it. And also, you know, you're not just going to slam on the brakes 4 feet off the kitchen line, contact your volley from a completely neutral position, and then start moving again. It's just not an option. So I think with the return to serve, especially, I mean, I remember I used to have my butt on the fence And so I would step into it. I would get low. I would have a nice knee bend, and I would have a solid center of gravity. But I was always moving through that ball to get myself forward. And I know that most of the time that is a single situation, or I was more conscious of it in a single situation. But I teach a lot too, or at least used to. And getting to the kitchen line in doubles is an issue for a lot of players. So yeah. We've talked about a variety of things to do that with a higher return, this and that or whatever. This is a little bit different of a topic. So if you need to do that in doubles also to make sure that you are established at the kitchen line for your fourth shot, then that's what you have to do. You can't just completely stop, or you're not going to get there. And I think there's plenty of ways to, there's plenty of ways to continue to move through and not let it affect your consistency that much. That's going to take some reps, and that's going to take some practice. But really, most of it, in my opinion, is having that bit of a lower center of gravity and getting your legs aggressively involved in your shot. That helps you kind of continue your momentum forward after contact.
Yeah, I like that. And then just kind of thinking through this with you, another instance that I can kind of think of where I'm totally okay with you moving through it is more of an aggressive type play. It's if you hit like a really solid third, and you've been kind of moseying up, making your way methodically up to the kitchen, but you decide, I'm gonna put some pressure on and really press and really push forward here off this third, and quickly move up to try to attack that next ball. I'm totally okay with you trying to force a pop up there and then move through that and hit that volley as you're doing it. But again, takes practice. You have to make sure the biggest thing I see is swings are too big as you're moving through the ball.
Yep.
So just have to really be compact and not have a big swing, especially you already have a lot of force going behind the shot. So
that's the key right there. So, yeah. You know, when you are stationary or at the kitchen line or don't have your momentum, I mean, I walk into my serve. I'm all about that. Momentum is super important for me. I'm not the strongest guy. So to have that momentum, I think it's important to understand the situation and shorten up, especially in terms of the backswing, because your body and all your momentum forward is going to have some percentage effect on the power that you get on that shot. So you don't need to create it as much with your swing. So very important, good call, whether it's a solo shake and bake, you following up your shot in the midcourt moving forward, or possibly off of your partner's drive or drop also. Another good place to where kind of just getting athletic and continuing to move forward is important instead of just completely stopping to strike the ball.
The only time where I'm okay with a big swing as you're moving through it is if you have pine tar on your paddle.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Why?
Here we go. Here we go.
What?
What? Oh, no, nothing. Nothing.
What are your thoughts on a 50K fine?
Man,
it's a lot of money.
I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, God. I actually think I saw it somewhere on Twitter early on and put like a wow or something as a response, as that was kind of wild. 6 months or 2 months, a year probation, 50K fine. But I do think level playing field is extremely important. And this could be a making an example kind of situation. But maybe thinking through it a little bit further and reading a couple of comments, that it was just unfortunate that it happened to Andre, and he was kind of maybe the first foreign substance guys. I know there's been paddle issues. I'm not exactly sure, but I think looking back on it now, I think that probably did strike fear in some people and will strike fear in some people moving forward if they were thinking about getting that competitive advantage and possibly altering something or walking that line of what's legal and not legal. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm okay with it, even though when I first saw it, I was a bit shocked.
Yeah. To me, it's like, it's not like he was, I think there's a difference between being caught like mid-match or like by the ref on court, you know, as they're checking paddles before the match, versus like submitting a paddle for testing. To me, I should be able to submit like whatever I want for testing to get it approved, right? If I want to submit, you know, a sandpaper paddle, they can test it and be like, oh, this isn't USA Pickleball approved, or this is ridiculous, Rob. You can't. No, of course not. Well, I wouldn't expect a $50K fine for submitting a paddle that wasn't approved. I would just expect them to not approve it. So I don't know. I obviously, if it was intentional and he was trying to get away with it, one, he did it in a bad way because he submitted it for testing. Like, do that after it's approved and hope the ref doesn't catch it on court. You know what I mean? So it's like, it seems to me, it seems super extreme that it was just a paddle that was submitted that wasn't approved, because there's a lot of paddles that get submitted that aren't approved. A lot of companies that are trying to ride that line. And so, yeah, I don't know. I thought there was a typo, like 50K. Like,
yeah, 50.
Like, it was like 5K. Is a lot. I think 5K would be insane.
I checked to see if it was April 1st, you know, like when I first saw it. I was like, oh, God, is somebody, you know? And then it was like, I think it was the kitchen or the dink or something that I saw it on. And I was like, I mean, it's not April Fool's Day. I mean, this has to be legit. And sure enough, it is. But is there not, excuse me, I guess there's, I mean, I guess if you're getting extra deflection or grit, you are altering your paddle. So yeah. I guess it isn't much different. Adding a foreign substance, some might
it's
say,
easier to catch,
is that next step of doing it. But I guess you can kind of lump it all in to the same kind of situation, getting an edge through doing something to your paddle. So maybe it's really not much different than having extra grit or having the deflection. Is like, just because you added something to it, I'm not sure how to exactly interpret that.
Yeah, and I found his statement pretty odd, Andre's, and it was like, unfortunate, but we agree with the fine. It's like, if that happened to me, not so sure I would just be like, oh yeah, this is all right. It's just 50K. It's all good. Here's a check.
And that's reading. And that's also like, I mean, that's reading into it. Maybe that is just the statement that he made and doesn't like add to his guilt or innocence or anything like that. But of course, people are going to take it a certain way. Someone says that he didn't fight it or whatever. Oh, he's guilty. I mean, I'm not sure that's the case.
There's just not many details out about it, which makes part, right? It's like nothing's really been shared.
I'm sure there's more. I don't know. I have not heard anything personally, but I mean, I would imagine that there is a couple more specifics that could possibly be shared about the situation.
It was interesting timing because at the APP New York, Jack Monroe was supposed to play with Andre, and I think Braverman was too. And then, like, I think 2 days before, he pulled out because he didn't get permission to play it. Which was a new thing that I hadn't heard of, because to my knowledge, his contract said that he could, you know, he was able to play whatever he wanted. So, to get the fine, like to me, that means his contract changed in some way, or there's a new contract. So I'm not sure if he's signed with PPA now, PPA MLP, fully, and like part of that new salary amount or contract amount, they just took that imaginary 50K out and gave him a lower amount because, right, to my knowledge, he's not playing any more APPs. So,
Gotcha. I see.
I don't know if that's a piece
maybe
of it.
So, maybe so. Wouldn't surprise me. I know. Yeah. There's a variety of different types of contracts, just kind of depending on the time that you signed it and whatever was going on. So not positive, but that would make sense.
I'm not super surprised that PPA would go after him, right? He's had a hell of a year. He's, you know, I would say he's a top five men's doubles player right now in the world. So no surprise that they want him to play over there exclusively. And I guess we don't really know. Nothing's been announced, so we'll kind of see how it all plays out.
Yeah, maybe it'll just fade into oblivion and we won't hear anything else and he'll just start playing again in 2 months. That'll be that. 50K, that's healthy. Yeah, I don't know if Proton or one of his sponsors is paying that. That came straight out of his contract, like you said. I mean, who knows? But it's definitely an example made, and I think that somewhere down the line, somebody might want to do something shady, and they'll remember this ruling.
Yeah, because I mean, the precedent's been set, right? Illegal, like foreign substance, $50K, boom.
Yeah, people will be people, and people will always look for edges. So it's something like this will pop up again, and if you got nothing in the back of your mind, you're more likely to do it. You have $50K in the back of your mind, you're going to be less likely to do it. So yeah, you kind of need to think about it from all perspectives. And here we are.
You know what it did? It got, you know, I think it could have been a big pickle misdirect where it got the heat off Yola for the Gen 3s. And now people are talking about this. You know what I mean? So it's like nobody's talking about the Gen 3s anymore.
Well,
it's a big Yola misdirect.
I heard somebody, I was scrolling through the Twitter streets, as we've talked about a couple times now, but somebody mentioned something that nothing ever gets resolved. There's just something new to talk about. And it's like a constant rotating thing. It might have been like, you know, like a junkie, like a pickleball junkie, like Hey Shay or something like that. And was
hey,
like,
Shay.
Something pops up, you get resolution, then something else pops up. There's just no resolution. This pops up, and then 3 weeks later, this pops up, and it just keeps going, and nothing ever fully gets
It's very
fixed.
True.
So it's
a never ending cycle of everything.
Yeah, never ending cycle of everything. So like I said, you know, 2 minutes ago, here we are. Just another thing to talk about on IFR. We got plenty of topics, so I guess it's good for us.
I mean, we were going to go into Sacramento, but no need. There's some new partnerships. I mentioned one, Thomas Wilson, Jack Sock will be super fun.
Oh, yeah.
We got a couple APP players going over to play. We got Susanna Barr playing. I think she's playing with Connor Garnett. I'm not sure,
the net
sure who
okay.
she has on the women's side. Okay. We got Jack Monroe playing with Julian Arnold. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if, you know, just waiting on Julian to turn it around. He's got all the talent. So
yeah, he needs to get something going, and that's pickle. That's high level athletics. You know,
it's high level athletics.
It's a good
perfect place to stop it, Adam.
Perfect.
High level athletics, high end content creation. Here we go.